Okay. Hi, everybody. Welcome to this week's show. My guest, very, very funny guy. Don't know if we've ever met, but always been a big fan. He is a great impressionist, stand-up comic. He had his own show, Frank TV. He's on Mad TV. You've seen him on The Late Show with David Letterman, The Late Late Show, Craig Ferguson, a whole bunch of different shows. Frank Caliendo. Hey, Frank, how are you?
Doing well. How about you?
I'm doing all right. It's freezing. You're in Arizona. I'm in New York. I wish I were in Arizona.
It's still like 48, 50 degrees here, so.
It gets to 48? Really? I feel like it would be 70 and you could go golf.
No? Well, it'll be 78 probably later today, but this morning people have their trees covered in case it gets down below. No, really. They have them. They've got plastic bags all over everything in case there's a frost.
Oh, wow. I'm sure homeless guys are happy to see that.
Well, the homeless guys are covered in the bags, actually. I live in a really tough neighborhood where they just cover the homeless people.
Oh, my God. That's hilarious. Hey, by the way, your father is really funny. I saw the web.
Oh, God, no. Please don't be. No.
I don't know if your mom's the quiet one. It seems like your dad's pretty out there. My mom's the ham in the family. My dad was quiet. We're Italian too, you know, and so we wear it on the sleeve. I grew up in Providence, Rhode Island, but your dad is hilarious. Has he always been like that?
Where did you meet him? Did you met him?
No. I saw the videos that you did with him. The webbed feet one that you there's online where he talks about you and that you have webbed feet and you're like playing ping pong in the background.
I don't even remember that. He's my dad is the kind of guy. He's not funny on purpose. It's what was it Dennis Miller used to say that about Jerry Lewis, that if he was as funny
there's nothing funnier than when Jerry Lewis is trying to be serious, and there's nothing more serious than when Jerry Lewis is trying to be funny. It's pretty brutal.
And I think he ended it with Chachi.
Right. He used the reference Kenzo, and I never knew what it was, and I live in New York, and then I was driving up Madison, and it's like a high-end men's clothing store from Japan. And he goes like, hey, you got to know what you're talking about, Kenzo. And I was like, I thought it was like the name Ken, and he just put Zo at the end of it. But
right.
I'm just like, I feel like such an idiot. I love him, but when I watch his stuff, I feel like an idiot.
Oh, yeah. It's just completely over my head as well. But my dad's the kind of guy, and I've had to tone him down because he would come to shows. First of all, my dad, we grew up playing sports. And my dad was a minor league baseball player before I was even born. So we grew up playing sports. That's all we did. It was never anything about the entertainment kind of business or anything like that. It was just sports. We played baseball, football, basketball, but
And grew up in Chicago, right?
In Wisconsin. I was born in Chicago, but grew up in Milwaukee.
Okay.
So he thinks of entertainment like a stand-up show, like a baseball game. He's going to go to the game, and you might go 2-for-3. You might go 0-for-4. You don't know. Right. And he's rooting for you to do well. But it's, you know, as you know, you go to two shows in a row, they're going to be fairly similar.
Right.
There might be a little bit. Now, 6 months down the road, there might be some differences. Go down even further, changes and evolves more or whatever. Mm. But he's got that thing where he's just like he would come to three shows in a weekend, and I'm going, what are you doing? But now it doesn't end bad there, because he used to wear a shirt with my picture on it.
Ah, that's awesome.
And come to the show. Yeah, it's awesome when he's not your dad.
Yeah, exactly.
When you're looking in on it. And so he would come to the shows, and it was almost like a cartoon where he'd have like flashing arrows pointing him to him going, I'm Frank's dad. That's and he'd introduce himself to people. He'd try to get in pictures with people. So it was almost like I don't know if it would be the reverse or if it would be that, but it's like a pageant dad, but he's a stand-up dad. He would come and he would just want to be a part of it. And it's to the point where my dad would meet people And I had to stop this. My brother is like quality control for me. My brother Rico, who like I actually have him as a liaison between me and my dad, so I don't yell too much.
Yeah, yeah.
So my brother, I've had to tell him, I go, he can't bring some of these guests to the meet and greet.
Wait, he brings friends to the meet and greet?
I should use the term friends. The friends term is, he uses that loosely. People he meets on the way to the show.
So, like, if he stops at Dunkin' Donuts and there's a guy in line with him and he starts talking, what are you doing? You want to come to the show? And he'll just bring the guy.
Open his shirt like Superman. See the picture of me. Even if the guy doesn't know who I am, we'll bring them to the show. And he's done it going to, like, in Vegas. He'll be meeting people in the casinos. And he will bring them in to the show. And to the point where I've gotten, who are these people? Like, I'll have relatives there to talk with. And the relatives are all ticked because they haven't seen me in months.
Right.
They want to say hello.
Right.
And he's got people he's just met.
Some stranger who's like stealing cheese and putting it in his pocket, right? Taking your cheese platter away. Like you don't, you know, yeah.
You know what? I wish they were that nice, some of the people. I mean, these are some people, I don't know. I mean, just some of the people have been missing like a row of teeth. I don't know if you have a row of teeth, but I'm thinking more like they're shark people and they've got only part of them. It's so ridiculous the things he would do. And then he would bring some people and they would start grabbing me. Like if you had like an older lady that would come and I'm like, she's drunk, Dad, you can't. So I'm on, you know, then I'm texting Rico, my brother, you got to stop this. And he's like, I'm on it. And then the next time he would bring somebody else and like, you can't just stop. It just doesn't make sense.
And what does he say to you when you like say, hey, look, this is going too far?
You know, he seems to get it more now after maybe 50, 60 times of this. But it's just, I mean, it's a weird thing where he wants to be the show.
Yeah, my mother's the exact same way. My mother started a furniture business and we lived in a tenement house when it was unheard of for Italian mothers to go to work, let alone start their own business. So she's very headstrong. So she won't listen to anybody. She does what she wants to do. And she was born with bad ears and she has to wear a hearing aid, but she won't wear a hearing aid. And when she does wear it, it's always like, it's always that nonsense, right? So she decides she's going to come see me. Now, I don't like my mother. I don't know about you, but is your dad like, does he sit close to the stage? Can you see him?
He would be on stage if he could be.
He'd be on stage saying, now that joke's a little weak.
He'd laugh at everything like I was getting a hit. You know, if everybody was laughing, he would be looking around at the audience to make sure they're, you know, absorbing it the same way he is.
Yeah.
And he would be, I mean, it's just like sports. He's rooting for me. So yeah, he would sit in the front. He used to do that. And I said, I can't, I don't want to look at anybody I know.
Yeah.
That's
exactly.
The worst.
Especially your parent and especially your mother. So I said, you can come to the club, but you have to sit in the back. And she got really upset that I was dissing. I go, I just can't have people I know up front. So what happens? I'm on stage and there's this little short Italian woman like moving in the shadows from spot to spot because she's trying to get near a speaker so she could hear because she wouldn't wear a hearing aid, right? So it was worse because my whole focus was on my fucking mother who was moving around the back trying to find the spot. And I said, you can't come to my shows anymore. She goes, why? It was fine. And then people would come up to me after the show and like she'd say, what do you think of my son? He's not that funny. I'm the funny one. And then she started, and I'm like, you know.
Oh, dude, that's the same line my dad has. That's exactly – that is exactly the same line. Right. That's got to be a generational Italian thing then. I'm the – to go to everything, see everything, and then to go, that's nothing. I'm the funny one.
Yeah. I worked on The Daily Show and got some write-ups and awards and stuff. And so, you know, like a proud mother – she puts some of the articles up in her store. And one day I was there and a woman comes in and she goes, oh, I like that show. You work on The Daily Show? Yeah. And my mother goes, he works on that show. You know, he was never funny as a kid. Who knew that he was going to be a comedian? I'm like, why are you undercutting me? What is this?
Yeah. My dad's name is also Frank Caliendo.
Oh,
so that's a tough thing, because he'll take, like, if there's an article written about me, he will take his picture and put it, paste it on top of, not really, no, but that I'd have to be like, you're wrong.
But this personality comes through in this video, because you could tell, like, he was very comfortable in front of the camera, just going, yeah, I think he called you the eighth wonder of the world, but then he started to take credit for it, you know?
Exactly. It all comes back to him. Everything that we do, the kids,
yeah,
anything. My dad used to tell us the reason he had kids was so he'd have somebody to mow the lawn, so he would have somebody to bring him food. It wasn't about, you know, any type of carrying on the family name with three boys. It was, how can I have a free indentured servant?
Right,
how can I have someone just to do stuff for me make my life easier?
We got to put your father and my mother together, because they'll either hit it off or implode, because they're so like atoms collide kind of thing. My mother, because of this furniture story, she would always say, do something for your country. Pick up a rag and dust. She goes, you know, I started this business, but I'm doing this for you. And, you know, you got to help. Like, it was the same thing. Like, there was the guilt thing. And, like, you know, everybody's got to chip in. And just all about her, like, all the time.
Everything. It's an amazing thing. Because I think I'm kind of the opposite. I don't know. In show business, it's a weird thing, because people see you on television and stuff like that, and they think all you want is people to notice you. Mm. And that, I don't want any of that in my regular life. I don't walk around with an entourage. Not that I'm like that famous or anything like that. But as soon as you walk around with an entourage, or you wear the sunglasses where you're not supposed to, right, you draw attention to the fact that you're out of place.
Right. Exactly.
And I'm short. People expect me to be, and I've lost a bunch of weight too. So people expect me to be like 6'2", 400 pounds, and they see me and I'm 5'6".
Right.
And probably 180, 185 right now. Mm. And I'm like this giant barrel chest. Like, no matter what I do, my chest just is big, and I have a fat face. Like, I could, it's funny, because I look, you people will see me and they'd be like, huh, you lost all that weight. What happened to your cheeks? Why are they like, there's nothing I can do. I don't know. I don't understand it either.
I'm going to start doing cheek workouts at the gym to kind of get those toned up. Right?
Oh, that's the sad thing that I do, dude. I'll like be moving my face all day, like hoping that I can do some type of spot reduction. But there's nothing that ever happened. I mean, it just is what it is.
Yeah.
I'm a thick person. I'd never be skinny. I mean, but I'm way thinner than I was and much more fit. I've been running like, the other funny thing is, I've been running like 5 miles a day, pretty much every day.
Wow.
But my ankles I'm in the best shape of my life, and I'm in the worst physical pain of my life.
You sound like a 70-year-old man. My ankles are killing me.
That's exactly what I would, but I was a 70-year-old man when I was a kid. That's why I never exercised, really. It was because I hurt my back opening my locker in high school. It's like, how do you, I mean, the things, I did that too. I couldn't walk for 2 weeks because I bent over to tie my shoe and my lower lumbar went to I was in the form of a C. I was basically the shape the floss should be in between your teeth.
You know what I do now is I talk about this in my act. I sit when I pee. Because I'm so tired all the time, and everybody in the audience looks at me, and there's always one guy who nods his head. Like, there's always like one guy who does it. I go, I should have been doing this years ago. What macho thing am I proving being alone in a room and standing? I sit, it's relaxing. And then I went to the hardware store and I bought a collapsible little stool, and I sit in the shower now. I'm like a 90-year-old man. And then I actually said this, like, if you sit in the shower and pee at the same time, you don't even need to have sex anymore. There's nothing going to top that in your life.
That's funny.
It never gets any better than that.
Right? Well, I remember when I was a kid with the potty training device, was a guard. And the little guard, you could pee forward and it would just hit the guard. So you didn't even have to tuck down or anything.
Yeah.
You just let it go.
Go crazy, and then your dad played minor league sports, and I know you're a big sports fan, and you came out with a broadcasting degree, and at one point thought of maybe be a SportsCenter anchor. Were you into sports at all? Baseball? I read your kind of gag biography on, you know, that was like joking around about playing ball. But did you ever really play anything, or did your dad try to kind of get
by you? By the way, I think that joke biography still was, it was written by my brother with help from Adam Ferrara.
Oh, that's great.
Back probably like 15 years ago. Like there's something about a paramecium in there.
Yeah,
that was Ferrara.
Yeah, I was.
I wasn't even involved in my own biography.
Well, I started to read it, you know, because I tried to do some, I did some research on you, and I'm like, oh, he played baseball. My kid plays baseball, and I love baseball. And then I'm reading, I'm like, this is a fucking gag biography. Like,
yeah, I think it was, it's the Roy Hobbs, right? It's the Natural.
Yeah, you were born at three.
Born at the age of three.
Right.
Already ahead of my time.
Yeah, exactly.
My brother actually wrote that. My brother is a really funny guy with terrible timing.
Is this Rico?
That's Terry, my other brother.
Oh, okay.
My brother, Rico's like the guy who could be at the party and just walking around with a beer and everybody just gets along with him and he'll start dancing with people. And it's like, he's the social guy. Terry is the engineering type, the awkward, he's smart. But absolutely zero common sense and no street smarts whatsoever.
How does the zero common sense manifest itself? I would think as like a smart engineer type. Would he just like one of these guys that can't tie his shoe kind of thing? Or
yeah. Well, my son has it too. My son's a young sixth grader who goes to eighth grade math and barely gets anything wrong, but he can't find his shoes. Ever, even when he's wearing, and then when he tries to tie him, literally, it will take him 10 minutes to tie both shoes. And you're going, you're on the spectrum, buddy. You know, let's throw some cards down and see how many there are.
Right, exactly.
I'm actually in the middle of. Well, I don't know if it's in the middle. It's near the in a pilot process right now, mm-hmm. And it's partially about the family. And it's going to have like some of those elements of the family stuff and my dad eventually, if we get that far. But
honestly, I wish you the best of luck. I think you're super talented, but you're out of your mind. You don't want the show to go. You're going to create a monster in your father if this becomes an issue.
Then he won't ever ask for money.
Exactly. He has to sit on the set in every scene. He can't say anything, but he'll want to be on the set with that T-shirt with your face on it, just sitting there.
And my dad is the guy, like, I offered, this was years ago, I offered to fly him out to Minnesota, to Minneapolis for a show, because he was going to come to the show. I was like, all right, I'll fly you out.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, no, just give me the money. I'm like, no, that's not the
just
offer.
Just give me the money? Did he really? Yeah.
He wanted the money. So I said, no, I will fly you out. And he goes, no, I don't want that.
It sounds like a parent talking to a college student.
It's crazy. So then he does this. He takes Greyhound, never having taken the bus before. I don't know if he didn't want to drive. I don't understand what that was. But he takes the bus and goes, you know, I didn't know they don't just go directly there and people get on and get off. I'm like, well, that's why you don't take the bus. Especially, you know, a 5, 6, 7 hour bus ride. That's a terrible idea. So he did it. He takes the bus back, even though I offered to fly him back. He takes it back. I don't know. A couple months later, I hear from people, why'd you make your dad take the bus? I'm like, well, so he, what did he do this to have a story that he had to tell? I don't even get it. And he's not like that kind of vindictive kind of guy.
Right.
But he just, everything comes back to him and woe is me.
Yeah,
so it's like. But he's also the guy who, when you meet him, he's the first thing he does, other than talk about me, is give you his softball stats for the week. So I'll be there and it'll be like, 2 for 3, Frank, 2 for 3. I'm like, okay, double play, turn to double play. But Dad, you're in the outfield. They brought me in for this one. They needed an extra infield. What are you talking about? And why do you have a New York accent suddenly? Because you're not from there.
You're Yogi Berra all of a sudden.
Yeah. But it's.
And you know what? You know what I find with my mother? I don't know about you. Everybody thinks she's a hoot. Oh, she's so funny. And then you go, but then my brother and my sister and I go, yeah, try living with her for like a day. Just like, you know, it's like she's great to the world, but she's out of her mind. You know, like she would make us drive around at night, and she, because she grew up in the Depression, she's like 80 something now, And so she goes through people's garbage cans looking for good garbage, not food, but like stuff that's broken. And then she has it fixed and uses it like clocks and shit like that. And she has money. She has like a lot, like a decent amount of money in the bank. It's just like, she still to this day cooks on with this set of aluminum cooking pans that she says really conduct heat well that she found in the garbage. And she's been using them for like 15, 20 years. Like, just out of her mind.
Yeah.
Are you, like, avoiding being like that with your kid? I am with my kid. Are you, like, trying not to sort of do some of the things your parents do or did or whatever?
Yeah, I mean, I don't seek attention outside of...
Right.
I just want to blend in. My yeah. whole life is... And people don't recognize me that much because I'm usually in some type of bad wig or something. And
right.
People think I'm going to be way older. They see me and they're like, how old are you? 25? And I'm like, well, I'm 40 now, but I just, for some reason, my skin looks young, even though I put all this junk makeup on all the time. I'm finally starting to look a little bit older, but people are like, man, you could pass for like 31, 32.
That's good easily. Though, man. You want to stay yeah. young in this business. That's great. I mean,
yeah.
did you know, in terms of sports, like you talked about sports and it sounds like you didn't do a lot with sports as a kid, right? But what was it about broadcasting that?
Well,
you said,
I did. Right? I never answered your question. Yeah. I did play baseball. Mm-hmm. We were the 1988 national champions in the AAU 14 and unders. Wow. Not that I'm still have the trophy. Well, I think the trophy's sitting around. My dad sent the trophy out here to me.
Did your dad put his name on it?
Coach Frank Caliendo.
What position did you play?
Yeah, the plaque actually said Coach, or the little signage on the front, whatever it is, but Coach Frank Caliendo and team.
There you go.
I was in the outfield there.
Oh, okay.
I caught in high school, but I didn't have a good enough arm to really be a good catcher. Mm. I could run a little bit. Mm. I couldn't throw. I could hit. That was what I could do is I could fastballs more than curveballs, but
you were like John Kruk, like you were like a lot of, like a thick ball player who had power, that kind of thing.
Yeah, you know what? Yeah, Freeze. I would say similar to that because he sprayed the ball around a lot too, yeah. And that's what I always want. I'm 5'6". My dad's always like, "You're a power hitter, Frank. Look at this, you know, the size of your chest." I'm like, "I'm 5'6". And it's like my chest is where all the muscle is, and then suddenly I have like I've kind of Popeye arms. I knew there was a problem when your forearms are bigger than your biceps. So I was like, I want to just spray the ball around. I want to be a good. I want to hit 400 or 500 in high school,
right.
not 300 with seven home runs.
Right.
I don't really care. I mean, I just like to hit the ball and play.
Yeah.
My dad once. Here's a couple lines from my dad. This is one of the things he said. He said, "All right. I'm rounding first," or something like that. He goes, "All right, now slide into second with your helmet on."
With your helmet on?
What does that even mean? Why? Why are you?
Oh God, your father's too much. He needs he needs his own show, is what he needs.
It is. Yeah, it would be a killer reality show character. I mean, he really would.
Did you did you know what was it about broadcasting? Were you a kid and you thought, "Oh, that's really cool"? Because that's a pretty specific thing. Like sometimes kids like say, "Oh, I know I want to do stand up or I know I want to do, you know, I want to act or something or be in a band." But broadcasting, like, were you young and said, that connects for
me? Well, I just took that in college,
yeah.
Because I didn't know what else I would take and I always loved television.
Yeah.
So I went that route because of that. I did want to be a sports center anchor. That was – I don't think I'd ever been any good at the retention of – the stat retention is crazy how good – although I found recently because I've been taking some acting lessons and stuff like that, that I just haven't used my brain for that type of memory in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I've been very lazy about certain things, so – I found that my memory and my recall ability has gotten way better just in the past month or so.
Just from acting lessons, huh?
That's because it's memorizing monologues,
yeah.
And I just I mean, most of the stuff I do, or I should, yeah, I would say most of the stuff I do, especially the sports sketch stuff, is always on teleprompter. I just throw a teleprompter up there.
Oh, it's right, yeah.
One thing that's really hard to do, I think, especially when you've got to hit certain beats, when you're doing an impression, is act, do the impression, and say the correct lines.
That's exactly what I wanted to ask you, because, you know, some of these, especially SportsCenter pieces that you're doing where you're interacting with the other, with another person, it's like, I feel like it's like you're rubbing your stomach and patting your head at the same time. And how do you keep it all straight?
You know, I think some of it is getting the, you know, you make the impression a character.
Right.
The thing about a character and an impression that's different, other than the person, the audience, knowing who the impression is and not knowing who the character is, you have to kind of teach them who that person is when it's just an original character, or when it's an original character.
Right.
But if you break and go outside the box with the impression, everybody knows it because it doesn't sound like the impression anymore. But if you do that in the character, nobody really knows how the character would react in that situation or what their voice would sound like in a particular moment.
Oh, right.
So a character, which is what I'm really working on now, is developing characters outside of impressions, because they're evergreen as well.
Right.
Like every impression, the person dies or they get in a lot of trouble for drugging women and being gone. <You know.
laughs> Or holding babies over railings and
exactly. I mean, you look at the some of the most done impressions that I've done or other people have done. Bill Cosby, Robin Williams, completely off. You know, you can't do that anymore. Right. How about
In the comic, and you probably sees like that Robin Williams died, and you go, great, now I can't do his impression. Like,
I mean, that happened with Farley. I tell that story to people. I was on the way in Wisconsin, on the way to Appleton Skyline Comedy Cafe, heard the news of Chris Farley dying, and that night did the impression of him, because in my mind I was like, if I can do it now, I can do it anytime. And it was exactly that. And the ego, or not the ego, but the narcissism inside of me was, this is terrible that he died. I'm going to have to change my act. This was blowing the room apart right now.
Yeah.
So I would see, that's where I was then, and where I am now is a completely different person. Robin Williams passed away. Mm. And I can't even say died. And so Robin Williams passed away, and I get all these calls from people who want me to talk about him, right? I'd never met him. I always wanted to meet him. He was one of my idols, him and Jonathan Winters growing up,
wanted. He's a great guy. I met him. He would come to New York to shoot films and stuff, and then he'd come down to the Comedy Cellar and hang out at the table with us. And then and one night, this is probably, you know, I've met some cool people. He's so nice and so quiet off stage. And one night I'm on stage at Stand Up New York on the Upper West Side, and I see in the back of the room Robin Williams in the doorway. And I'm like, oh, probably wants to work out. So I finish my set, and they say, you know, Robin Williams is here to see you. I go, what do you mean? He came up. He saw I was performing there, and we had kind of gotten friendly, and he just came up to hang out and watch my set. And he even gave me, like, some notes on a joke that made it better. And I was like, you know what? I don't think it's going to get any better than this. Like, it was insane. He was such a nice guy. And unassuming, you know?
Yeah, his son came out to see me in San Francisco one time, loved the impression, and then was like, I'm bringing my dad back tomorrow. He didn't bring him back, and I was like, ah, screw this, screw everything. Next day I hear he's in rehab.
Oh, geez.
And it's like, gosh. And again, it was one of those moments of me.
Yeah,
and exactly. But like I said, I've completely changed at that point. But the other thing was, and I see things totally differently now. Yeah. The stuff in entertainment that just grosses me out is, so everybody's calling me. I did a couple calls with some close friends to talk about, because people knew about this Robin Williams impression, how much I loved him and stuff like that.
Right.
But then I started getting calls from all the local news and everybody that heard me do this one. And there must have been 100 people who want me to call and talk about a guy I've never met just because I did the impression of him. and loved him, especially in the early Robin Williams when it was just totally different than anything anybody had ever seen. And then I'm like, I hate this. I don't know the guy. I feel weird about it. But then when I stopped doing it, it's kind of like it's almost like I don't want to be a political kind of guy here, but it's like when you try to do something good in this country, like you make a regulation.
Yeah.
So they just go to a different country and just right. do 10 times worse.
Right.
You know, like you make an environmental standard here. So then they just send it to China and India.
Yeah.
And it becomes 1,000 times worse
right.
than it ever was here.
Right.
Like you're trying to do something good to fix a problem
right.
or to help with a problem. And it goes and it just, in the big scheme of things, you feel better about yourself, but something else went horribly wrong. That's kind of like, so what happened was it was just all kinds of other people talking about Robin Williams who were just comics who'd never met him and talking about, I mean, it was just, and I even saw a guy who did a really incredible Robin Williams impression, did like all these different Robin Williams characters that he did in movies and it was like an audition tape for him and he got tons and tons of hits. I was like, so Robin Williams' death was like your moment to be seen in the limelight.
Yeah.
I go, I mean, I could have done a ton of stuff that as a tribute like that.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, but is that my, I don't know. I don't know if it's because I had kids and I have a conscience or whatever.
Well, I was going to say, like, what changed this? I mean, you've had major success now yourself, and it sounds like you kind of, it's funny because you went the other way. Most people turn into the jerks with the sunglasses and the entourage, and you seem like you gotten more perspective. Is it because of the kids? Is it because you've gotten older? Is it because you have success and a sense of security now yourself?
Yeah, I think I'm just secure. I mean, there are times where I have those moments where I could have done so much more and done. I've really pigeonholed myself. That's Freudian. I've really pigeonholed myself in a lot of ways. I pigeonholed myself as the sports guy, and I pigeonholed myself as the impression guy.
And do you regret that at all?
No, I mean there are moments where I do, but I've never shown anything outside of it.
Yeah.
So it's like anytime I ever get upset about that and feel like, man, you know, why are these? I go, well, that's really all I'm doing. The sports stuff was supposed to be a secondary job,
but
it just became so much of a moneymaker and a big thing for me that I just turned it into the job and said, well, screw it. I have kids and a wife.
Yeah.
Why would I? I'm happy.
And you know, the other thing I noticed with you though, that sets you apart from other impressionists is your writing is really good. Like you're a funny guy. If you look beyond the impressions, which are always spot on, the segments that you write, and Frank TV I thought was really funny, and I was bummed that it didn't last. I thought you were doing a really good job with that. Your comedy writing, which is by definition who you are, is smart and clever. You know, sometimes you see somebody do an impression, and it's just like, you know, kind of a standard impression, and it's more like a display of talent of the physical.
You're right.
Attributes.
There's no take on the character. They
exactly.
They don't create a take. Dana Carvey was the best ever at creating a cartoon take on somebody. I think Daryl Hammond is the greatest ever of mimicry in terms of doing a person almost looking in the mirror and you getting the exact person back.
What you call tech? Because I was reading something where you were talking about this technical impressionist versus a caricature. What is the difference? Explain for people listening, because I was fascinated by that.
Well, I think like if you watch Daryl, and Daryl's, I think, I don't know him personally, but if I've ever, whenever you watch him, he might make something a little bit bigger than normal, but he's really trying to get it right on the nose. He's really trying to mimic the person and become the person.
Right.
Dana would look more like he was trying to do like a caricature or something you drew and saw in a cartoon. It's almost
Just bigger.
You make everything the things that are a little bit bigger, you make a lot bigger.
Got it.
Daryl might do it just enough so you notice it. Dana would milk it to the point where you're going, that's all I want to see.
Yeah.
That's what I want to see. I want to see where he goes with that. So if you have a take, I mean, the first thing a person does with an impression is they get the sound-alike laugh, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or they get the body the body manifestation or whatever you want to call it, the look of the person, they do it on the face or the facial expression, and then you hear the voice. So that's now you've got two claps or laughs, right. And then you hear a little bit, and then the audience either goes, "What are the jokes?" or "This is great. You're really doing the impression of the person," or they're like, "Okay, move on to the next one." The vaudevillian impressionists were like that, where they would do turn around, show the face, mm-hmm. do the voice, mm-hmm. and then go on without any real jokes. To me, that was like that. That was the old school. I took from the Robin Williams, Jonathan Winter school of characters, and said, "Well, let's now put them not in situ. Let's make an observation on the person, break them down, and then put them either in another situation that really makes sense or fish out of water." Mm. So it's like anything you would do in stand-up. I mean, the normal stand-up is make an observation. And break it down a little bit. Mm-hmm. Now, extend it to a bigger situation. So it was really just taking the principles of regular types of stand-up observational comedy and applying it to these people to get bits. And that's what was a little bit different from what I was doing than anybody else at the time. I still watch. There's plenty of people on YouTube that people will send me these clips. I'm like, that's the greatest impression I've ever seen of that person or those people. And they're better than me.
Really?
And they nail the voice so much that you're like, holy cow. But then they're just doing the lines. And you're like, all right. Or they're doing, again, I'm gonna, the Dennis Miller, you know, the references. Jack Nicholson working at McDonald's. Yeah, one of the greatest actors of all time is a fry cook. How about you as a fry cook?
You know, Will Ferrell seemed to me, and if I have this terminology wrong, correct me, but like he would do impressions, but really just capture the essence of the character. Like his George W. Bush technically wasn't spot on, but I felt like it captured the essence of the character.
Yeah, yeah, he had a character. So you don't even have to have the voice. The problem is with me is people are like, "Well, that voice is not that good." I'm like, "Well, it's just supposed to make you laugh. I'm not trying to be the person.
Right.
It's just to take the essence." But I've had a few that were really good, I guess, in terms of trying to get the voice right on. That then that's what everybody wants to see and they look for. Carvey did a great thing too, where he had all these characters, original characters that weren't impressions, and you mix the two together, and then people will accept what you're doing. If I say a name, I've actually done this in my act. I'll say a name of a famous person. Like if I say Billy Joel, it happened the other night. I said Billy Joel, and I was talking. It was just a joke. And I said something about Billy Joel, and you could see the audience going, "He's going to do Billy Joel. Piano Man's coming." No. I just mentioned the person's name. You get them in that mentality, and that's what they're looking for, and it becomes tunnel vision for the audience.
Yeah. And do you find there's stand up mixed in with the impressions, right? I mean, you're not just, it's sort of you kind of sprinkle it in.
Yeah, a lot of the setups are sometimes the punchline will be the impression. But there's lots of little things and just jokes I do in between. Mm. I mean, I'm trying to do more stuff about my family, like some of the stuff I talked to you about earlier, and try and figure that kind of stuff to work those people in and be characters and ease into. I don't think I'll ever be a monologist. That's not really what I do. Mm. It's taking on characterizations and taking on a character and doing a line. I always like, you know, with the ESPN stuff that you're talking about, what I try to do there is it's all relationships. It's all what's this person's relationship to this person.
Right.
And that's where the comedy comes from. And you have some jokes. They're not hard hitting jokes. They're more like situational laughs.
Well, I like your Mel Kiper. My son's a big SportsCenter. He watches it all the time. And he knows you and he's a fan. He was excited that I was interviewing you. And we were watching your Mel Kiper again last night. And it is about relationships and his relationship to, is it Todd is the other one?
Yeah, Todd McShay. So the joke is, like, here's the stand-up part of it. It's like there's two guys on ESPN that talk about the NFL draft. One guy's name is Todd McShay. He's normal.
Right, exactly.
The other guy, his name is Mel Kiper Jr., and he's kind of a cross between Sam the American Eagle from The Muppets and Count Chocula. And whenever McShay starts to talk, Kuiper doesn't let him. He just cuts him off by yelling his name. Thaw. Tremendous situation. Incredible ability. Incredible length. It's always – and he's the only guy who could use an adjective or an adverb to describe the same adjective or adverb. It'd be like tremendously tremendous, incredibly incredible. It's like, what? You can't – that's not – you can't do that.
Right, but when you do that impression, you get a sense of the essence of that guy as sort of kind of liking him. Mel always came off to me before you did the impression as the guy – who just likes to talk and likes to hear himself talk.
And totally different person. Totally different person than that in person. It's like reverse Superman. When he takes off the glasses, suddenly he's the nicest, most helpful guy in the world.
Really?
But he puts them on, and then he's just this – he's like a – it's like an evil character. Like, I'm going to shut you up. You're not going to talk. Come on. Why do you think you're – why do you think it's a time for you to talk? I don't get it.
Oh, God.
So another example is like Trump, which has been huge for so many comics. But for like me, my characterization of Donald Trump has been – there have been a couple things that I – like, and it all comes from the first Republican debate where you can't argue with him because – and you're going to lose because he argues like a five-year-old. And he's the only one who can get away with it. So if they say something to him like, Donald, you can't do that.
Oh, yeah? Well, you're a duty head. You are. You're a poopy face. You're the stupidest ding-dong brain I've ever seen in my entire life. And you can shove it, stupid head.
So, but if they come back at him with something, he's like, oh, yeah, well, guess what? I'm rubber and you're glue and whatever you say bounces off of me and sticks like you glue to your stupid face.
And it's exactly the essence of him as a person. It really is sort of like this street like mentality child. Everything's fantastic that he does. Everything's stupendous.
What's the most amazing thing you've ever heard? This right now in your podcast, well, the ratings have just gone higher because I'm on it. Gotten a call from Arbitron, which wasn't doing podcasts until today because they heard I was on here. And also Nielsen, who's going to be doing podcasts soon. They're changing it just for this. And they said, we've doubled the Super Bowl. It's a tremendous – it really is a tremendous situation.
And it's all because of me. It's all because of me.
It is. It is, and everybody knows it. He creates facts.
Yeah, it's the most fascinating thing.
The planets are rotating in the opposite direction than they have been for the last whoever knows how many years, and everybody knows it, and it's China's fault. China has changed the rotation of the solar system.
And I know I don't know anything about foreign policy or any of the people, but who cares?
Yeah. And I don't. And that's there's a reason. But as much as I don't know, I know more than 100 times more than what Ben Carson knows. And Ben Carson is an average doctor. He really is. Splitting Siamese twins, who cares? I have Siamese cats. I keep them in separate rooms. It's just as incredible of a accomplishment.
My God. It's so funny.
He's a character.
Yeah.
But he's a now I've met him before, and whatever anybody thinks of him, and I don't know what he's like now, but when I met him before, he was the nicest guy.
You know, people have said that. You know, he's been on he's come on the Daily Show and stuff, and, you know.
Totally different.
Different. Just a quick hello. You know, he's in the hall talking, just hello, just quiet, you know, joking with an intern.
He knew everybody's name that he was walking as we're walking through Trump Tower. Now, don't get me wrong, there was some of the Trump character that came through, but he was one of my favorite lines he said to me is he's like, or he said to like some of the people there, he's like, this is good, isn't this pretty good? And I was like, it's fantastic, Mr. Trump. I'm like, wait, does anybody ever tell you it's not? He's like, no, and that's a big problem, Frank.
Oh, really? He wants people to tell him, though.
Yeah, he's like, nobody ever tells me. That's why I have my daughter working with me. And it's, you know, is it? But we're going, we're in it. We go, he goes, Frank, do you have a second? I'm like, sure. What do you want to do? He goes, come with me. And he brings me in an elevator. And I'm like, oh, boy. And then the elevator stops in between floors. And I'm thinking, Sopranos, I'm ready to hear Journey start playing. And we go down and he goes, Frank, do you like ties? I'm like, sure. He's like, here, have some ties. He starts giving me ties from the kiosk. And then he's like, are you married? I'm like, what does that mean? You're going to open up a curtain and there's a harem? You know? So I've got
you
some
like
of these.
Filipinos?
They're European. They're tremendous. This is where I found my wife, one of them. And
He's like, so this is, that was the question. Are you married? But that wasn't the best question of that. He's, I'm like, yeah. He goes, do you like your wife? So I was like,
because I can have her whacked if you don't.
Yeah, it was an incredible moment. And then he grabs this diamond studded watch and pulls the price tag off of it and hands it to me.
No.
And I was like, okay, now I don't know. It's in the first floor of Trump Tower. So I don't think it's real, but it's Donald Trump giving it to me. So I don't know. So he sends me out into New York City, into Manhattan, with what I think might be a huge, expensive watch. And like, it was the greatest prank ever done. It was incredible. You've just been Trumped.
That's
but
awesome.
So we're going up the escalator. We'd gotten, I think, off on the the second floor. I don't remember where it was. We got on the first floor, and he goes, "Do you see that Starbucks, Frank?" And I'm like, "Yeah." He goes, "That Starbucks is the number one Starbucks in not just the world, but the universe, not just the universe, the multiverse." No, but he's like, "That's the number one Starbucks in the world." And I was like, "Oh, really?" He goes, "Yes. Howard Schultz called me." And you would think in Trump Tower, it would make sense. The number one Starbucks in the world. But that's on the second floor, Frank. People have to go up this escalator to get to that Starbucks. By the way, the number one escalator.
I spoke to Otis. Otis said, oh, my God. This is fantastic, man. Listen, let's do this again sometime down the road. There's so much other stuff I want to talk to you about. I'd love to have you back on sometime.
Absolutely.
FrankOnStage.com to see Frank's tour dates. And then Google Frank Caliendo webbed feet to see his father. appreciate it, man. Good luck with everything. Hopefully, we're both in LA together, or you're in New York, let's get together and hang out.
Sounds good.
All right, man. Thank you.
Thank you.